This is an In It For The Kicks exclusive.
In 1999, Canadian producer DJ Hatteras blew up on the international scene with the anthem Spaced Invader. Since then, he's been forging his own sound of funk and disco-infused house, moving through the electro years, consistently creating big records, and running his own record labels Blow Media and Hattrix. Hatteras has just released a brand new album. It is called 2.5 Million Light Years. So we thought it was about time we spoke to the Ontario native about his latest work and his love for the galaxy. Literally, tell us, how long has your brand new album been in the making for?
About, last November I bought some new equipment. I bought a Moog Sub 37 and never really had a Moog before, and it's got such a fat, really cool sound. And I mean, over the years I've used pretty much every platform to produce. I started with Cubase and an EMU sampler, and, you know, tried Pro Tools and Acid and Nuendo, and last few years I've been on Ableton. But basically, I don't know, you know, there's so many people that are trying to do cookie cutter music out there. There's so many sample packs. There's so many guys that are like trying to follow a formula, and if, you know, if it doesn't sound a certain way, it's not right. But like, with my album, I wanted to like break all those rules and just have a lot of fun, do something different, and try to pretty much put together like a sonic cosmic journey, and, you know, where you could lie down really and like put on headphones and listen to the whole thing from beginning to end, and at some point it'll make you feel, you know, really excited and want to get up and dance, or maybe moody, or even sad at other points. But like, for me, it's a real fun challenge, and I don't know, when I make music, I really like to push myself, and from the beginning, I've always liked to break rules and do things a little bit differently. So with this 2.5 million light years album, it kind of starts off with like a little weird alien abduction kind of moody little intro, and then it gets into some, you know, progressive, and then, you know, electro and house, and then, you know, there's even some kind of retro 80s analog sounding melodic stuff that's, you know, inspired by Giorgio Moroder and, you know, that era. And I don't know, it's just a lot of fun for me. And one of the things I've also done is, I mean, everyone's all about streaming right now, and it's great. It's great exposure. But when I started making music, I remember, what really got me into wanting to make music was being a little kid and getting some albums on tape. One of those was a Michael Jackson album, and it was like just the coolest thing, that like to have this tape with the artwork and put it into the deck and press play, and then like, you know, sleep with the little tape beside me on my night table. And I just wanted to capture that, because with this album I decided to make a small run of cassette tapes as well, and shockingly they're actually selling really quickly. I just announced it yesterday and I've already sold a bunch. It's insane. People from all over the world are wanting them. And you know, to be honest too, like, listening to the album on tape, it's got a different sound, you know? It, like, sounds really warm. And when I made it, I pretty much wanted to capture, like, a bit of a throwback sound. I wasn't trying to do, you know, some super, I don't know, super modern sounding, you know, kind of the opposite of dubstep or complexer. I wanted to sound chunky and fat, you know, influences from, like, French house, disco, 80s, all that. So, yeah, that's about it. You know, really, it's just, it's a new thing right now for me. But, you know, I have a million other projects on the go, but that's the thing that's released right now. And it's pretty exciting.
Where did the inspiration to call it 2.5, is it 2.5 million light years away? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's basically, I made an album about a year and a half ago too, and it was called Message from 04244. It was the same kind of concept with this black and white kind of illustrated artwork. And I mean, I've always really been super into space and stuff. Like, when I mean, think about it, Space Invader, right? Like, that was what, 1999 when I came up with that. And like, I've just always been so fascinated by, like, I don't know, the cosmos. And I feel like, in the strangest way, that like, that's where I get my inspiration from. And 2.5 million light years is where the Andromeda galaxy is. So I'm always tinkering with the idea, and like, oh, you know, that's where those cosmic beams are coming from there and penetrating my brain. And then I'm just a conduit making music by getting the message from there. So like this album, in a way, I mean, you know, I've made everything, and I mean everything. There's a lot of guys who, you know, they'll use a producers or engineers or will pay for mastering or whatever, but like, you know, this album is like beginning to end, my creation, the mastering, the mix down, all the sound design. But even though it feels like sometimes when I make music that I'm really just like a puppet, there's some crazy aliens are shooting beams through me and I just like, I don't know, I just channel that and make what comes out, you know? So yeah, weird as it sounds, but 2.5 million light years is where the album came from, and it's the Andromeda Galaxy. I don't know, that's about all I can tell you, you know?
You mentioned just a little bit earlier how you've kind of been influenced by a lot of the early kind of synth sort of stuff. When did you first kind of discover, you know, discover electronic music? And it may not have been called electronic music at that time.
It was in the mid-late 80s. There was this, you know, I mean, of course, New Order and Duran Duran and Depeche Mode, and they used a lot of synthesizers, right? And so those influenced me. But then there was like a style of music that was coming out in from Miami that, you know, was called freestyle, and you know, early house music as well. And you know, I remember when it was like, you know, when the word techno was, I first heard it was in like the early 90s. So I mean, from the beginning, I was always, even as a kid, I never really liked pop music that much. I always like looked, it was all about the hunt for me. So I would look for different, fresh music. And, you know, growing up in Toronto, there was a couple of radio stations out here that would play different forms of electronic music. So, yeah, that really shaped me. I started off, you know, loving even, you know, vocal house, garage house, and then techno came in and early rave music, and you know, evolving into like really loving drum and bass. And I mean, my tastes are pretty varied, even though I make more like of a house/electro house, but I love all forms of electronic music.
So for you, what were those, you know, those early kind of rave experiences in Canada? What were people doing?
Well, when I was a teen, I don't know, might have been 15 or something, my sister, who's a year and a half older than me, took me out to some like dances, and they were like in halls and stuff in Toronto, and there was, you know, it was all about DJ culture. They were playing house music, so we did that for about a, you know, year or two. And then I remember first hearing the term rave. It was in 92, and there was a, it was just came over from the UK at that point. There was a couple of DJs who brought the culture over, and they started a weekly night called Factory Tuesdays. And it was all rave music, like really early Prodigy and all that stuff on XL Records. And, you know, everyone had like a glow sticks and, you know, crazy stripy tube sock hats and, you know, fat shoelaces. There was this whole thing. And, you know, you had to go to a meeting point and find out where the party was going to be. You'd get a little map, that whole culture. So I really got into that and went to a ton of parties. And it wasn't long before, about a year after that, that I just really wanted to find a way to like be a part of the scene. So I started helping a promoter hand out flyers, and quickly after, a friend and me started something called a Smart Bar, and we named it Liquid Adrenaline. We were both studying biology at the time and nutrition and all that stuff in university, and it was like basically we were at every rave, every party with our little concession booth with our blenders and our like cool like you know, mad scientist lab coat on, and a black light and a big banner, and we would like blend up and sell healthy drinks, like stuff with vitamin C and, you know, protein powders and banana and all this stuff. So because I did that, I was like pretty much at every party. Like I was at every party, like even Wednesday nights, like Friday, Saturday, from beginning to end, setting up the booth, tearing it down. And doing that, I got to know everyone in the scene in Toronto. And you know, after a couple of years of that, it was like, hey, you know what, we know a lot of people here, let's just throw a party and let's do it differently. So what we did is we made a little really tiny flyer. Like the flyer was the size of a business card instead of like, you know, big fold out, and it was laminated and hole punched, and we handed it to everyone coming to the parties, and they'd wear it around their neck and they felt like a VIP, you know? And yeah, those parties were called Liquid Adrenaline. And at the time in Toronto, you know, mid late 90s, the scene was just blowing up. So it didn't take too long before our parties were getting, you know, even one of them got 10,000 people. They averaged 5,000. And, you know, that being at all the parties and being so, you know, into the whole scene is how I just shaped all my musical tastes through that. And, you know, wasn't long before then I started to make, you know, fiddle with music a little bit. And it was something I just really enjoyed and spent a lot of time doing. And, you know, I still have a lot to learn. But, yeah, that's a summary of my progress through the whole scene. When it came time to making music, when I started, I didn't come in as, like, a musician, or I didn't have all this knowledge. I mean, I took some basic piano lessons as a kid, but, like, for me, it was, like, sampling was how I got into it, you know? And I remember being in Toronto in the mid-90s at a club, and Thomas Bangalter of Daft Punk was DJing at the party. You know, I got to actually meet him after his set, and I shook his hand, and I was like, hey, man, really cool, you know? And he didn't speak very well English, but the thing that struck me, that meeting, I saw him, and I was like, holy cow, this guy's, like, you know, such a hero, such a legend to me. He's such a, like, you know, like a god, this guy, you know, making his music. But he looked so normal, and he was so humble and so quiet. And it just, that moment, I realized, I'm like, well, if this guy can, like, go ahead and do music and tour the world and do his thing, then, I mean, it's attainable now, you know? And so that opened my mind to the idea that, you know, I could do this, I could make music. It wasn't this, like, long shot, you know. And I just started by getting a bunch of disco records from the local, you know, throwaway record shop. You know, they were the throwaway records, you know, $2-3 in the back bins. And I just got, like, whatever I could get my hands on, and I just started sampling little bits, and that was, like, a huge part of how I started making music.
Was the kind of vinyl culture quite a big kind of influence to you?
Oh, yeah, totally, absolutely. There's a bunch of record shops in Toronto, and one of them played a record. It's actually still open. It's, you know, it's still around, but yeah, I would frequent that shop all the time, pick up records. There was another one called Trax Records, and I definitely was part of that, walking in and, you know, all the guys clamoring for vinyl. And I, the first few records that I would even, you know, collect were Green Velvet's label, Relief Records. Whenever, I didn't even need to listen to it. I knew it was good. It was there. As soon as the new one came out, I bought it, you know, took it home. And I was buying and collecting records just without the goal to ever, you know, DJ or play them out. I just loved the music, you know, and I really didn't ever have any goals to perform. And really, that's not the main reason why I do what I do. It's more, I come from a wanting to create, you know, perspective, and from that stems the shows and everything else.
How have you found it since, kind of, in particular in America, EDM, you know, how have you found it for yourself? Do you think it's been detrimental to kind of that particular scene? And I'm sure it's probably bled into Canada as well.
I don't know. You know what, to tell you the truth, I remember back in, like, you know, the late 90s, you know, I was into disco house and, you know, what I thought was real house. And there was this style called Euro at the time, and it was like, to me, I just cringed whenever I heard it. And I was, like, such a purist, I was such a hater, I was like that angry kid who was like, hell no, I hate this crap, no, this is, like, the real stuff, you know, like, that, I hate that stuff. And it was, and I hated it because it was like, it was about the money, it was, like, formulaic, it was commercialized, you know. And, like, really, that stuff kind of died down in the 2000s, and then it, you know, kind of the big corporate music machine reared its ugly head again under the EDM moniker, more than a decade later. And, you know, originally some of the EDM sounds, you know, were innovative and fresh. But the thing that, like, I can't stand about it is that, like, a lot of it is so formulaic, you know, and it's, like, almost an insult to the culture that, you know, I came from and that I still feel that I'm a part of. But I don't want to be a hater, so I'm cool with the fact that, you know, it has, you know, made a lot of young people aware of electronic music and it opens the door. But there are also problems in that when these big corporations get involved and then the agents and agencies all try to, like, chase the dollar bill, then they sometimes end up blocking, you know, new artists from emerging by always recycling the same big names. So, like, I am really torn about it. It's good that it's exposed people to the music, and it's, you know, there are good aspects to it, and there are creative artists within it, but I don't like monopolies. I don't like when money is the most important thing. To me, money isn't the reason I do what I do. It's because I really love to create. I have an obsession with being creative and trying new things. And I think that the whole idea behind electronic music and the electronic music culture was a place for the renegades to go and for renegade music to be showcased. But, you know, times are different now, right? With the internet, like, not too many things can even be kept a secret anymore for too long. It's like, as soon as something, you know, is released, it's all over the internet and it's already old news a day later, right? So, you know, EDM, you know, the scene has done good things, but it needs to come a long way. It needs to leave room for, you know, for growth and embracing different genres, and there needs to be small parties and small festivals as well, because just the mega festivals, they do seem rehashed quite often. So, you know, there's growth that can be had for sure.
When's the new album out, and where can people buy it?
All right, so it actually releases on October the 9th. So depending on when you're listening to this, it's probably out. It'll be all over, you know, iTunes, Spotify, Beatport, Pandora, whatever, all the digital retailers. But what's also special about it is that I printed up a small run of analog, you know, high quality collectible cassette tapes. Those are only available directly through my online shop, and that's at right now at my Bandcamp page. But there are links to all that at hatiris.com. And, you know, although you can, you know, get the album on YouTube as well, pretty much everywhere. But I'll tell you, though, there's an extra magic to that cassette tape, though. It just sounds a little different. And at the end of each side, there's about a minute of, like, secret music that I, like, put on just for fun that isn't available anywhere else.
Awesome. Just kind of like when you used to get the, when they used to do those CDs with the hidden tracks in it, you know, before you figured it out, and then it'd be like you come to the end and 4 minutes later the secret tune comes on and it's like, wow, did you hear that secret tune on?
Yeah, exactly. That's totally what I was thinking when I did this. There isn't a long gap, though, but by the time they come on, because, you know, hit the set, there's A side, B side, so I didn't want to leave a lot of empty space. But, like, still, like, when each side comes to the last couple of minutes, there's just a little teaser of, you know, just something else that isn't available anywhere else. Just, I don't know, cool, makes it more interesting. And, you know, a lot of the tapes, too, that I sell actually give people a chance. If you want, hey, I'll sign it to your name or whatever. And everyone's asking for that because for them, it's just something they can hold. It's so cool. It's collectible. You know, not everything needs to be in the Wi-Fi iPhone matrix. You know, like, it's nice to have things outside of that. So that's my goal with this tape.
Is there anything else that we should know about the particular album?
Not really. You know what, though? I mean, listen to it with an open mind. Some people may, you know, have expectations that, where's this? Where's that? At the end of the day, it's really fun. It's really cool. It's all original. You know, there's this particular album, there's nothing sampled. it's very analog feeling, a lot of, you know, synths and, you know, I don't know, it's just, it's really fun, like, listen to it, and, you know, some of the stuff, like, you know, you could lie down, put headphones on, and hear all the details, and, like, think it'll just take you away. Some of the music is a little different than what you'd expect, but, like, I really do enjoy also making other genres, so I, like, pushed it a little bit with this album, but I didn't push it too far, but it, you know, it's a cohesive, fun, cosmic, sonic journey that I'm sure everyone will enjoy.
The first ever electronic music show on Haureki. This is In It For The Kicks, 10 till midnight Friday nights. Radio Haureki.